Republicans narrow their gap at the top of the ticket in South Florida, while Democrats take the top spot in Miami-Dade County. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. South Florida has gotten redder. Republicans flipped two U.S. House seats in Tuesday's election, and President Trump lost by a smaller margin than he did 4 years ago, helping him win the state again. Meantime, Miami-Dade County voters elect a Democrat and the county's first woman mayor, Daniela Levine Cava.
The problems in Miami-Dade County are not partisan ones.
What do you think about the election results? For once, Florida ran a smooth election count, even though there are a few tight races still counting. South Florida, red, blue, and purple. Share your thoughts. Phone number's the same, 800-743-9576. The program made possible by Willie the Bee-Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. The voting and most of the counting is over in Florida. Republicans flipped two congressional seats, helping deliver Florida for President Trump and expanding the GOP majority in Tallahassee. Democrats, meantime, win the top job in Miami-Dade County. We're taking a close look at the local and regional results of this election with a panel of journalists, and we want to hear from you. What do you think about these results on Tuesday? And, of course, the presidential results, which we await for several states to still report. How and why did you vote the way you voted in 2020? 800-743-9576. Taking your phone calls. Are you anxious about the results as you're waiting for the final tally? The final unofficial tally, we might add. What did you think about Florida not being at the center of an election for once here? The Florida election running pretty smooth. Are you satisfied with the way that you voted? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You can also find us on social media. Share your thoughts on Twitter at WLRN. And we're hearing from folks across the region about the ways they're dealing with election anxiety.
My name's Jessica, and I live in Deerfield Beach. I've had a lot of anxiety about this election because so much is at stake. I've been glued to results on NPR and other outlets. On election night, I definitely consumed a lot of wine. And now to cope, you know, I'm commiserating with friends, making sure I take breaks from the news, get outside and walk my dogs.
Yeah, it sounds good. Got to remain hydrated, though, Jessica. 800-743-WLRN to share your story of voting or waiting for the results, for that matter, and what you expect to come next. 800-743-9576. Powerhouse trio panel of journalists. WLRN reporter Danny Rivero is with us. Sabrina Rodriguez, reporter for Politico. And also Glenna Milberg, co-host of This Week on South Florida at Local 10. To the three of you, welcome back to the South Florida Roundup. Danny, let's continue where the counting is continuing, because I mentioned the voting is over, but counting is continuing in certainly in some other states. Florida finished fairly on time. You've looked closely at some of those mishaps that we had here in Florida 2 years ago. What changed this election in 2020?
Right. So one small correction, I suppose I would say, is that Florida is not actually 100% done. If the margins were much, much tighter, like what we're seeing in Georgia, just north of us, we would probably be in the same boat. The vast majority of the votes have been counted. Last I checked, it depends on the source, and even the state's not exactly clear on it. It's about 98% of votes have been counted in Florida at this point. But what changed and what made us different is that last year, the state legislature passed a law after the recount kind of nightmare election of 2018 that allows mail-in ballots to start getting counted 22 days before an election, which is one of the biggest windows out of any state in the whole country. And they did this because 2 years ago in 2018, when we had three statewide recounts, a big part of why the whole process was drawn out and there was a lot of confusion about the vote totals changing and whatnot, yeah, was because of the delay in vote by mail ballots. So Florida very much got ahead of the curve on this and changed our system to allow for early voting. And then you have states like Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, they knew that this was going to be an issue. Everyone knew it was going to be an issue.
Yeah.
and their Republican legislatures, for whatever reason, did not change the rules.
Yeah. Sabrina, you've spoken with election officials before and after the counting, and Danny's point well made, and I appreciate that correction, Danny, because we want to get the facts out there that not every single vote expected to have been cast by Tuesday at 7 p.m. has been counted yet in Florida, but the margin that President Trump has is wide that the unofficial results are in. But Sabrina, what did you hear from election officials and voters, for that matter, in terms of the difference in the conversation around voting and then the counting of the vote that we saw this week?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on. And, you know, I mean, I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief that Florida is not the mess this year. I think that was a big topic of conversation, you know, post-election, has just been seeing how smoothly, I will say quote unquote smoothly, but comparatively smoothly to other states, as we're seeing, you know, Pennsylvania right now dealing with the counting. And, you know, election officials going into this already had a sense of, you know, there was going to be historic early voting turnout. There was going to be historic numbers of mail-in ballots that they were going to have to go through. And they had obviously the benefit of being able to start counting early and be able to have things, you know, cranking out on election night. Now, when we get into the results, obviously, we know that the big storyline has been just how well Trump did in Miami-Dade County. And, you know, and ultimately Biden did win, you know, 7 points, but that's nothing what was expected or, you know, hoped for from the Democratic Party. So a lot of the conversation now is, you know, what went wrong and, you know, kind of playing the blame game.
For the Democrats and for the Republicans, meantime, it's a bit of a victory lap that they're taking. And we want to hear from you about these results. 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. David and Davey will get to your phone call in a moment. You can join him on the phone at 800-743-9576. One other observation about the results, Glenna Milberg from Local 10. I think one of the biggest surprises that I had was just after 7 p.m. Eastern time, you refreshed the website for the Broward County Election Supervisor's Office, and sure enough, there's hundreds of thousands of votes that have been tabulated. And this was in Broward County, right? I mean, you know, we were waiting hours and hours and days 2 years ago for that kind of responsiveness.
Well, not only, well, first of all, hi, everybody. Great to be with you. You know, not only waiting days, but remember, they reporters found ballots kind of tucked away in the mailroom. It was just a debacle in Broward. So I guess hats off to Pete Antonacci, the supervisor of elections, who oversaw a perfectly smooth ride for election night. And, you know, to the point made earlier, the ability to count early the vote by mail 22 days early and have that all ready to spring onto the results page soon after polls closing is a total game changer. And I think, you know, South Florida was just kind of braced for another Florida moment that we didn't have, thanks to the election supervisors who took all the lessons that they've learned in the past couple of cycles and applied that and the new change statutes and laws, and really had a great experience. I don't think I've spoken to one person from either party, from voters to operatives, who can dispute that. I think it was just really a smooth ride this time.
In the meantime, we do have at least one local race, very important state Senate race, that is heading into a recount at this point. Danny Rivero from WLRN, this is the Florida Senate District 37 race between the incumbent Democrat Jose Javier Rodriguez and the Republican challenger Eliana Garcia. What's the latest on the count and the likelihood of an automatic recount or the potential of even a hand recount?
So the recount has not officially been declared. That needs to be declared by the Secretary of State, but it seems pretty darn clear at this point that there will be a recount. Actually, just before the show, I was watching the Miami-Dade canvassing board. They are going through all the vote-by-mail ballots right now, the ones that have signature issues and whatnot, and you know, both campaigns were really trying to track people down to get them to cure their ballots, especially the ones they thought would tilt in their favor. Last night, the provisional ballots were counted, and the split was still just 20 votes with the incumbent, 20 votes below the Republican challenger, Eliana Garcia. So the canvassing board should complete their kind of follow-up count today, and then hopefully within a couple hours we'll know who's on top. You know, it could change. The margin is so small that really at this point every single vote counts.
And it seems destined for at least an automatic recount, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And if it's between if it's under a half a percentage point, then that's an automatic recount. If it's half of that, then it's the automatic hand recount.
Yeah. Talking about the results from Tuesday night and beyond here, awaiting the, of course, Electoral College results here, several states still counting ballots. You are listening to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. How Florida got things right this time, generally speaking, in terms of the processing of the ballots. You may disagree with the results. Maybe you agree with the results. Join us, 800-743-WLRN. WLRN reporter Danny Rivero is with us, Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico, and Glenna Milberg, co-host of This Week in South Florida on Local 10. And you can join the conversation, 800-743-WLRN. Got a lot of calls here, folks. Let's begin in Fort Lauderdale with Bernadette. Bernadette, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Wanted to just say that the first caller or the first speaker was excellent. He's absolutely right. The difference in Broward between this year and 2 years ago was a problem that existed for many, many years that the state legislature knew about, that large county supervisors have been complaining about, and that was not having enough time to process the vote-by-mail ballot. It was very well known, and it was basically ignored. And instead of fixing the problem before last year, what happened was the can was kind of kicked down the road, and you had basically the former governor of Florida filing lawsuits to slow down the vote and then filing lawsuits to speed up the vote.
And this was Governor Scott, who was at the time running for U.S. Senator.
Exactly. And then you had that governor also claiming that there were nefarious things going on in Broward County, where just like President Trump is now claiming that that people are trying to commit fraud in order to keep him from winning the presidential election. That was happening in Broward. So I do feel some justification for Dr. Brenda Snipes to see now that people are really talking about the time that it takes to really achieve democracy in the way that it should be. It takes time. And when you're talking about counting so many, many, many ballots and paper, it's different from how it was, you know, many years ago when we had the electronic machines and Florida voters told us clearly that we wanted paper because we wanted documentation of our votes. And once that happened, what it means for large counties, particularly like Broward, which has been voting by mail, turning in those ballots at a high rate for many, many years, it meant it was going to take a lot of time. And so for this supervisor and also the supervisor in Palm Beach County to be basically demonized as they have been, I do feel some vindication for them that the truth is really coming out about what it takes to run a clean election, and it takes time. And I think that's the story that needs to be told louder, more broadly, because these supervisors who had made a career of being, you know, Dr. Snipes in her case, 16 years as a supervisor running good elections, and actually the general election was run very well. It was a recount, and all of the people monitoring from Tallahassee, asking for reports that were not even necessary, slowing down the staff time of the persons running the electronic equipment, and doing all of these things really to try to disenfranchise and suppress votes. That was the problem, and it wasn't so much because you still have the same staff. You know, God bless.
Yeah, and the current supervisor election in Broward County, in fact, noted that the staff is much the same. Bernadette, I appreciate lending your voice to that. Thank you so much. All right. David and Davey, you are up next. Want to talk a little bit about voting. Go ahead, David.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
I wanted to comment about did I vote, how did you vote. I wish I was able to vote. Unfortunately, in 1993, I was convicted of a felony and taken my voting right was taken away. Up until then, I had always voted. And people say to me, well, there's a way for you to have that removed in Florida. I went to the site, jumped through all the hoops, got a notice back, and emailed that I'll hear from them in the year 2023. Now, I don't know which team Democrat, team Republic, or team neutral is trying to suppress votes, but that sure seems like a style of voter suppression.
So, David, you're referring directly to what had been called Amendment 4, the restoration of voting rights for felons in Florida.
Correct.
And so you have, if you had any prison time, you've served that time, correct, David?
Yeah, my sentence was probation.
Okay.
All restitution has been paid.
And what about fines and fees?
All fines and fees have been paid. Everything's been paid. They say, hey, I'm ready to go. It's going to take quite some time for review. Because of the number of people that are trying to do what I'm doing.
Yeah. Danny Rivero, I know, has done a lot of reporting around this. Danny, what are you hearing there from David?
Right. I mean, that it's really unfortunate, but David, it sounds like what David's speaking to is just the root of the problem with the whole rollout of that law. You know, if everything that David said is correct, he should have been able to vote. I mean, there's no reason you would not be able to vote if all your fines and fees and restitution are paid. And that's, but the confusing part is that the state has been to actually verify people that have questions about this stuff. You know,
right,
there's a
right.
lot of people that they don't want to break the law again, because if David votes and he wasn't actually eligible to vote, well, that's another felony conviction.
Yeah.
So you have people,
David,
you have people that, you know, they don't want to do that, but then the state can't tell them what they need to know. So yeah. it's very unfortunate.
David, did you attempt to register to vote at all?
No.
Okay, so you're waiting for that process. David, could you hold on the line? A producer is going to talk to you off air, but I appreciate you sharing your story with us here on the South Florida Roundup. Sabrina Rodriguez, Amendment 4 was a big point of contention and a large debate over the summertime as it was continuing to be adjudicated through court. I think one of the questions that's just going to be continuously asked about this election, and I think the answer is going to be unknowable, is what effect would a full implementation of Amendment 4 would have had on the Florida results?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the conversations that we've seen at the national level regarding Amendment 4 was obviously to what Danny was talking about, of, you know, if you paid your fines and fees. And a lot of effort was put into, you know, we have a lot of high profile celebrities and athletes, LeBron James and Tyler Perry, that, you know, invested a lot of money in trying to make sure that a lot more people would get to vote and that the fines and fees wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, the question will be in the next election cycle, you know, do we see movement on this? Do we see more people able to actually vote?
Yeah. Not only athletes and celebrities, Glenna Milberg, but also billionaires got into this conversation. Michael Bloomberg talked about making a large donation, and he certainly made a big impact in terms of spending millions of dollars on political advertising in the waning weeks of this campaign here in Florida.
Yeah, I mean, Bloomberg and his money have many different avenues we can talk about. Just on the felons angle, what Bloomberg's money did or was intended to do or what he offered to do was something similar to what the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, which is the group that actually got Amendment 4 on the ballot, they have a pot of money, too, to help former felons pay off fines and fees so that would not be what kept them from registering to vote. So that's what that money was about. But I was interested in listening to David and Davey because it sounds like he should have been able to walk in
right.
and register. What's interesting about that is that according to the RRC, there were supposed to be 1.4 million people, former returning felons, who might have been on the rolls this time. That's kind of what everybody was focusing mm-hmm. on, and what would they do to this election. I think the number is just more than 67,000 former felons registered to vote. So, I mean, that's a far cry. Still, 67,000 people, especially in Florida, is a huge number. But the money portion is still one of those catching points. But it's A4 is in full effect right now. And for those felons who have completed sentencing and paid all fines and fees, there should be no impediment to their registering.
Yeah. Glenna Milberg with Local 10 is with us. Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico. Daniel Rivera with WLRN. You're listening to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN, talking about the results and the process of voting and the counting of voting in the 2020 election, and hearing from voters across the region about dealing with election anxiety, waiting for the results this week.
My name is Joelle Hervis. I live in Boca Raton, and I have been coping with election day anxiety by watching a lot of reruns of Frasier on Hulu. It's one of my all-time favorite sitcoms, and it always makes me laugh. So that humor has helped ease my anxiety. I've also been listening to a lot of chill and upbeat music on Spotify, mostly recently rock steady and reggae. And I've also been eating my leftover Halloween candy, which includes Twix, Twizzlers, and Swedish Fish.
Jolie, you had me on Frasier and the upbeat music and the Twix and the Twizzlers. I'll be honest, you lost me on the Swedish Fish. But nonetheless, 800-743-WLRN. Join our conversation here on the South Florida Roundup. Quick timeout, your calls, 800-743-9576. Tweet us at WLRN. Back on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson, continuing our conversation about the 2020 election results with a panel of South Florida journalists, WLRN reporter Danny Rivero, Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico, and Glenna Milberg with WPLG Local 10 this week in South Florida. Your phone calls 800-743-9576. 800-743-9576. President Trump won Florida by a large enough margin, larger than what he won 4 years ago. Certainly, arguably a landslide by Florida standards. Miami-Dade County went to Joe Biden, but the president improved his margin compared to 2016. Cuban Americans played a big role in local gains amongst Republicans and NPAs. Guillermo Guerne is a sociologist at Florida International University. His recent poll of Miami-Dade Cubans predicted the election results that we saw on Tuesday night.
Republicans are very good at making the Cubans feel very special, but can use them to talk to other Hispanics as well. And that's what Trump did down here. They made them feel, hey, this is not only the Cuban party, we're listening to all you guys.
And that Republican support helped carry down ticket in Dade County. 800-743-9576 to join our conversation. Glenna Milberg, that down ticket Republican strength in Dade County flipped two congressional seats. Donna Shalala losing in the 27th Congressional District to Maria Elvira Salazar, and Debbie Mercosal Powell out after one term in Congress, losing to outgoing Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez. What do you make of Dade County congressional seats going red?
Well, I think the whole down-ballot red wave raised a lot of eyebrows and a lot of soul-searching for Democrats as to what went wrong there, and I think that all comes down to one giant headline that goes like this: socialism and communism. And those two buzzwords, I just think, have been inundated on the airwaves and social media. Every time one of the Republican candidates talked about anything and had a campaign event about anything and all the ads, those were concepts that were raised. And a lot of people who sort of follow politics and who follow Democrats and policies raise their eyebrows and say, oh my gosh, that's ridiculous. Democrats here aren't socialist. Joe Biden isn't socialist. And Donna Shalala, Debbie Mucarcel Powell, they're not communist. But for the people who know what socialism, communism, and dictatorships are firsthand, those words are so resonant and so triggering. And I think that concept really helped frame the narrative for Democratic candidates. And it was done before Democratic candidates, including Joe Biden, really knew what to do with it or took it on head on.
Yeah, we didn't hear much for many weeks taking that head on from the top of the ticket or in those congressional races, how those terms, that branding, that characterization was used certainly by the Republican candidates that won those congressional seats here in Dade County. In fact, this week on Sundial after the election, Congresswoman-elect Maria Elvira Salazar talked about many different plans, but listen to what she had to say here about the Affordable Care Act.
We need to create better plans, cheaper plans, and for everybody. And how do you do that? With the forces of competition. You like your Obamacare, you keep it. But in the meantime, we've got to give you another option that's cheaper. What do you think? That's what's common sense, which is the least common of all senses for politicians.
Sabrina Rodriguez, what struck me about those comments from Congresswoman-elect Salazar, who painted her opponent with that socialism characterization, she said, quote, if you like Obamacare, you can keep it. Not a phrase that I don't think we heard during the actual heat of the campaign.
Not at all. It's good timing to say that now after the election, but not during the campaign. I mean, we've seen, you know, Republicans time and time again in South Florida do avoid talking about Obamacare because they obviously know that the numbers are not on their side when it comes to the issue. I mean, Trump did not come down to South Florida repeatedly over the past 4 years to talk about Obamacare. And that's obviously strategic. You know, the messaging was anti-socialism. The messaging was targeting Cubans, targeting Venezuelans, talking about sanctions, talking about human rights in these countries, knowing that that is a winning strategy in our communities. Whereas, you know, talking about Obamacare when, you know, Miami-Dade has the highest number of enrollment, the county in the country, you know, we know that that's not a winning strategy. So now it plays well to say that after the fact, because obviously people want to have their health insurance.
Yeah, the congressional districts with the highest enrollment in the Affordable Care Act among the top five are the Florida 27th Congressional District, which Maria Elvira Salazar is the congresswoman-elect, and the 26th Congressional District, where Republican Carlos Jimenez is the congressman-elect. 800-743-WLRN, Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico, Glenna Milberg with Local 10, Danny Rivero with WLRN, joining us with Dan in Fort Lauderdale. Go ahead, Dan. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I love you guys.
Dan, the cell phone's breaking up a little bit. Go ahead. We'll give it one more shot.
Let me give it another try. Can you hear me?
There we go. Much better. Thank you.
All right. Quickly, my observation is, you know, at no time in the last few weeks in Florida have I seen any Democrats suing to stop the vote when they were losing. At no time did I see any allegations of fraud or cheating or, you know, anything like that. And yet I see DeSantis now calling on governors where those states are close and where there are charges being made by the president and people in those states that it's fraudulent and that stop counting the votes. And DeSantis is calling on those governors to disenfranchise the votes and install electors. How incredibly un-American and unpatriotic. And I'll remember that when DeSantis is up for election again. Hmm.
Dan, I appreciate you sharing that perspective there from Fort Lauderdale. Much appreciated. Line six, John. Where is John? John is in Miami. There you go. Go ahead, John.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just want to touch on the point the gentleman called earlier. He was a convicted felon, and he didn't vote. Well, I voted. I'm a convicted felon. In fact, I cried that day. Hmm. It took me 33 years to I even tear up now. To be a part of a process that I love so much. I love being an American. I'm Cuban-American, and I love this country, and I love the whole process of voting. I made a mistake when I was younger, and I had to pay for it, and my vote was suppressed. Our vote has been suppressed year after year after year after year after year. Finally, and I thank everybody who voted for Amendment 4. I truly, truly thank you from the bottom of my heart because I feel a little bit more human. I feel a little bit more part of society that I was released to. It's just the whole spectrum of feelings when it comes to that, at least for me personally. As far as a convicted felon not being able to vote, once again, disinformation. I also want to thank Desmond from FRRC that truly worked hard, and that whole organization really, really, really stood behind us.
Yeah, John, let me just interrupt. Desmond Mead is who you're referring to there, Desmond from the Florida Mead, Rights Restoration Coalition.
Yes, an amazing man. I haven't met him personally. I had an opportunity. We couldn't connect. But just as a convicted felon, I just want to thank everybody that voted on this, because it makes me feel like I'm a part of something again. It makes me feel like I'm little by little, you know. You can never change the past, but at least you're doing good by it. And being a part of this process for me is being a part of the solution.
John, share with us a little bit about your journey to register to vote and to cast the ballot. You heard the caller earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I called.
Yeah. Who did not get the chance to vote, who shared with us he has served his sentence.
Yes, he did. And once again, they went to the Supreme Court. They went to court, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you have fines, if you have penalties. That's the case right now. You are allowed to go vote. And my process was, okay, so FRRC reached out to me a year and a half ago, and they were sending me texts and talking to me and asking me, are you registered? And the law hadn't passed. When the law passed, they hit me up again. Are you registered? And I went and I registered. And I was so scared, because I know how the process is, and I know that everything was in court. So what I did was I filed independent. And then once I got my card and I felt good about it, I held it in my hand, and then I changed parties. Just to make sure that nobody made a mistake and said, hey, we gave him a voting card. No, I have a right to vote. And I proved it by going back two times, and they sent me back the card again. So I went, I was applauded. I cried, you know. It's just a good feeling. And this journey for me has taken me years.
Yeah.
Because I went in front of a panel, in front of Charlie Crist, and they denied restoring my rights.
So you went in front of when Charlie Crist was governor.
Yeah, back then, yeah, you would go in front of a panel, you would go to Tallahassee,
right,
and they would pick and choose whatever rights they would restore, and I got batted down. Then I filed through the courts, got batted down. Then I gave up because, you know, I don't got the money, I don't got the time, the resources. But then I started seeing the case in court, and I started hearing about it. So I started doing my homework again, and then I discovered this organization, FRRC, and Desmond Mead. And they were really fighting for us. And it gave me hope. It washed me, not of my sins, but it made me feel like an American citizen. And that feeling, that's an amazing feeling. When you've been through what I've been through, and you've tried as hard just to make things right. You know, I can't change what I did. I just want to make things right. I want my son to be proud of me. And this is one of the ways that I could do it. I'm sorry.
John, I appreciate you sharing your story with South Florida. Sounds like you voted in person.
Yes, I did.
Very intentionally.
Yes, I did.
Tell us about that. Was that on Election Day?
It was 4 days before, on the 29th, before they cut off to start on the 3rd. Mm-hmm. I went right by my house. It was the library, and I live in North Miami. And it was amazing. The reception was warming. They didn't ask political parties. There was no questions like that. Nothing of the sort. They were just genuinely happy that I was voting for the first time in 33 years. And that feeling, it's a good feeling.
Do you have your sticker?
Good feeling. Yes, I do. And I put it on my voting card so I'd never lose it again.
Yeah. John, I appreciate you sharing that story with us. Very personal. But thank you so much for opening up. John in Miami there sharing the story. As a felon who was able to vote in this election, first vote in more than 30 years, John shares with us here on the South Florida Roundup. John, hold on the line there for us. We want to talk to you as a producer. Wants to talk here a little bit more. 800-743-WLRN. The panel of journalists here, Danny Rivero from WLRN, Sabrina Rodriguez from Politico, Glenna Milberg from Local 10. Emotional call there, folks, from John, and I think putting voice to that long, drawn-out battle over the restoration of rights here in Florida. Danny, Florida, one of the last states to have the process that it had in place for the restoration of voting rights for felons.
That's right. And by my measure, Florida, because of all this confusion and because of the money that's been thrown into the situation, Florida remains the only state that has a significant number of people that are unable to vote at this point. You know, Iowa was the last hangout, holdout, and the Republican governor there just about two and a half months ago or so issued an executive order giving 50-something thousand people their voting rights back. So Florida is actually the only holdout for this persistent issue when it comes to voting.
Sabrina, what'd you hear there from John? What was your reaction?
I have nothing to say after.
Yeah,
John,
I mean, right? Yeah.
I mean, that's what I love about this show is actually getting to hear people talk about it, not just pundits, not just, you know, my analysis from talking to strategists, but like people that are actually living this. And I think that's like a really important part of this process is understanding, you know, how people felt going out to vote. It's not just, you know, who voted for Trump or who voted for Biden, but like what, you know, what actually goes into this process and not just like political parties to the point that John said.
Yeah. Yeah. And Glenna, what it represents for us as Americans to be able to go into that polling place or open up the ballot on our kitchen table and make those selections, fill in those bubbles.
It's great to bring that up so that we all don't take that for granted because it's so easy and so common, right? You know, I'm listening to John, and I just wanted to make the point sort of in a bigger picture that, you know, crime and criminal justice is such a complex issue. And I think people who are really have no connection to that world think of, oh, felon, well, you know, he or she ruined their life, there you go. And there's so many deep issues about what makes a criminal and what makes a person whole again and second chances and restoration, you know, far, far more than the next 20 minutes. But listening to John, I mean, I'm just so proud to be a fellow American with him, listening to him and his commitment and his journey. And I hope that resonates with people.
Yeah, indeed. 800-743-WLRN, our telephone number to share your story, your journey of voting, your own analysis. As Sabrina says, enough with the pundits. Let's hear from the voters and what they say and have to think about these results and what's to come. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-WLRN here on the South Florida Roundup, talking about those results in 2020. Also hearing from voters about how they're dealing with election anxiety this week. Let's see if we can hear from Raquel.
I'm 20 years old and I'm from Palmetto Bay, Florida. As we anxiously await the results of this presidential election, I'm currently making pretzels to cope with my anxiety. I found the recipe on Instagram once I scroll past the political feed, and it's quite delicious.
Pretzels, almost a metaphor for politics as well, twisted up in all of the analysis. Well, we're going to hear more from you at 800-743-9576. Run through a bunch of phone calls in just a matter of moments. Stick with us here on the South Florida Roundup. We're back on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio, talking about the 2020 election, the results, the process, and to some degree, the anxiety for waiting for the national results. Well, while we continue to wait for other states to finish their count, here in South Florida, in Miami-Dade County, voters elected a Democrat to be the mayor, Daniela Levine Cava, first woman, first Democrat in that office since two decades and the first non-Hispanic in about 30 years. Levine Cava made the pandemic a focus of her campaign, and she intends to hire a chief health officer for Miami-Dade County. Here's what she said on election night.
I think people are very worried in this pandemic. They're worried about health issues and they're worried about the economy. And I think they saw that I am a person who truly cares about everyone in our community.
It was one bright spot for local Democrats, her election to the Miami-Dade mayoral position. Danny Rivera with WLRN, Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico, and Glenna Milberg with Local 10 this week in South Florida. Glenna, it was that one blue spot on the election, although the vice president, former Vice President Joe Biden, did win Miami-Dade County a much smaller margin compared to 4 years ago when Secretary Clinton won.
Yeah, you know, that race is so interesting in so many ways. And I will say, you know, congrats to Daniela Levine-Cava. You know, she and Steve Bogo, both commissioners for a long time, couldn't be more different philosophically and politically. But, you know, both great public servants who just really had different ways to getting to the future. But what was interesting about that election in Miami-Dade, you know, Miami-Dade Democrats have the numbers. In this election, Republicans had the turnout. So, you know, I just want to preface this by saying this is in what I'm about to say is in no way taken away from the really hard work and enthusiasm and talent that our new mayor-elect has. But what really struck me as so interesting in the voting patterns is that the mayor's race is nonpartisan. So we actually met people at some of the early voting places who just came to vote Republican. They were just voting right down the line Republican. And frankly, you know, respect to them, they didn't really even know much about the candidates they were voting for. But Steve Bogo did not have an R next to his name to show his party because his race, their race, is nonpartisan. So I wonder if Steve Bogo would have had a much higher vote count from Republicans voting the straight ticket on election day if they had known he was one. So that, to me, that was such an interesting, like, little eyebrow raiser.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what a historic win for the new mayor-elect of Miami-Dade County, and in many ways, first woman, first non-Cuban in two decades, as you mentioned, yeah. And she will have a almost brand new commission. Half yeah. the face of the commission is changing as well.
It's quite a bit of turnover on the commission as well. Yeah, as you mentioned. Sabrina Rodriguez, I know you look at a lot of national politics here in Florida, but you are a native daughter of South Florida here as well. And Esteban Bogo, his kind of geographic strength had been in the Hialeah area and that district that he's represented in many different types of political agencies. How do you see that local race here in Dade County? As Glenna mentioned, nonpartisan, but certainly the race itself and the language and how the candidates were engaging with voters, it was very partisan.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I saw a video that Glenna posted on Twitter that, you know, I had to laugh because it was just, you know, voters acknowledging that they were just voting straight down the ticket Republican, didn't even know that Esteban Bogo was a Republican because it doesn't have the R next to his name. And, you know, that's not what his campaign was based on. I think, you know, through his campaign, he made very clear that he was a Republican. Just last week, he was at, you know, a City of Hialeah Chamber of Commerce luncheon where he was touting, you know, the support that he has from Republicans. Marco Rubio was there making sure to get out, you know, the vote for him. But it didn't pan out. And, you know, the only thing that we can think of is small things like what Glenna mentions, that, you know, people just didn't know. People went top of the ticket to vote for Trump. And then when they got there, they didn't know that Bogo was a Republican, too.
Yeah. Let's run through a bunch of calls here, as many as we can, before we get to the top of the hour. Jason in Fort Lauderdale, you're up. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Go ahead.
So I supported Biden straight off the bat. I just want to tell you that. Biden, Kamala Harris. Just to let you know, I am Jamaican-American. Kamala Harris is also Jamaican-American. So it's automatic, I guess, that I would have felt support for her. But more importantly, as I told the caller, you know, the racism from this president, extremely disappointing. Like, why? And then, but more importantly, why did he even get a vote? Like, one of my biggest inspirations, I'll never forget this. My pastor, my church in Orlando, is a white man, white family from Cleveland. And for the years leading up to 2016, we'd always talk about the greatness of LeBron James, both playing basketball and what he does in the community. All of a sudden, because Trump had a problem with LeBron James, these people who are from Cleveland hated LeBron James vehemently. And in that moment, I said to myself, hold on. Am I to understand that racism is that powerful that you come from Cleveland, you see the good this guy does, and you believe this doofus
yeah.
because he pushed his racism?
Yeah.
And when that happened, it was over for me. That was it.
Gotcha. Jason, I appreciate you lending your voice there and your perspective from Fort Lauderdale. Also in Fort Lauderdale is Matt. Matt, you're on the radio now.
Yeah, good afternoon. Good afternoon in paradise.
and right back at you, Matt. Go ahead.
So I'm 60 years old, and I grew up in a very, very proud conservative family in the Rocky Mountain region of this country. And it would never be considered to vote outside of the ticket. But I have really started to get disenchanted over the last 10 years with the Republican Party, mostly because nothing that I used to think is what we took as conservative is a value of the party anymore. It used to be about conserving the environment when I was a kid, back when I voted in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be about conserving the resources in this country. It used to be about conserving the rights of every person, you know, as the Pledge of Allegiance is with liberty and justice for all, not for some. And it used to be with the conservation of these values that are American values used to be what the party represented in my mind. And it's just strayed so far from that idea, completely has strayed from it. And then to put a man at the very top of the party who is everything that those values don't represent, and to think because of a party line, we're going to just stand behind the man and say, okay. So this, for the first time in my life, I voted down the ballot Democratic the whole way. And I just wanted to share that story.
Wow, first time. So tell us just about that experience filling in that ballot. Did you?
That was fantastic.
It sounds like it was very conscious of you that you were doing this for the first time.
It was, and you know, and the thing is I didn't just vote party line, because I did the research on the candidates, of course, but you know, the party line was at the top of the ticket, bar none. There was no way. I didn't vote for him in 96, and there was no way I was going to vote for him again this year.
2016, I think you mean, in terms of... You voted in a lot of elections, Matt. I appreciate you sharing that perspective with us from Fort Lauderdale. I want to squeeze in one more call here from Deerfield Beach. Erica, you're up next. Go ahead, and thanks for your patience. Erica, you're still with us? Dig that phone out if you can, Erica. We got it quick. Time moment for you. Unfortunately, she's not going to be able to get there. All right. Well, let's Danny Rivero with WLRN, Sabrina Rodriguez with Politico, and Glenna Milberg. Unfortunately, Erica, sorry we couldn't get to that call here. Glenna, as you look kind of big picture here, Florida seems to be solidly red, and South Florida growing more and more purple. No?
Yeah, pretty much. That's story. Yeah. I mean, Florida's the top of Florida has been Republican for a decade or more now. And increasingly, I think, to, you know, the point of all of our discussion earlier this hour, South Florida, which is, you know, so many people say that Florida is what the United States is going to look like next. We are the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think you find such a demographic mix that really the party that learns how to really communicate with all the different kinds of people and their needs and their experiences, and there's so many and so varied, that's who is going to be elected. And, you know, I always, you know, I tell my daughters that there are Republicans, there are Democrats, and a perfect democracy is a very careful balance and compromise of each.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's what the parties ultimately really need to do. You know, and South Florida is that. And I think you see it reflected in this election when especially the Republicans really had a finely honed message for targeting individual groups.
Mm-hmm. Glenna Milberg is the co-host of This Week in South Florida on Local 10. Glenna, always a pleasure to have you on the roundup. Thanks so much for
sharing your reporting
with us. Sabrina Rodriguez, wonderful to have you back as well and sharing your reporting from Politico. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And WLRN's Daniel Rivero, who has been burning all ends, watching canvassing boards and election results for a good number of days at this point. Danny, thanks for taking the time to share your reporting with us as well.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And that is the South Florida Roundup this week. It is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. And I have to say, it's the final South Florida Roundup produced by Alex. He's been with WLRN for almost 3 years now, working with this program, producing and co-anchoring afternoon newscasts and reporting. Let me tell you that Alex brings integrity, humanity, and a touch of humor to everything he does. He is everything that you want in a journalist and a colleague. He's curious, he's empathetic, he's fair, he's creative. It's been a joy working with you, Alex. Thank you for all your hard work, your intelligence, your good nature that you've shared with us here on WLRN. So, for one last time, the South Florida Roundup is produced by Alexander Gonzalez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon, our digital editor. News director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. The director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. Our technical supervisor and radio ops is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling and listening, tweeting, and supporting WLRN. The program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist.